This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey everybody, this is the Western Rookie Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. I myself am a Western rookie, and I don't know if I'm ever going to be a Western pro, just because I don't live out west. So today's guest, Mr. Garrison Kinsel, how we doing, man?
Doing good, man. Glad to be on here. I appreciate it. Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Before we get into, like, I got a whole bunch of questions for you today. about like where you're from, what do you do for a living? You know, I know you're currently living in Colorado, but there's going to be a little bit of a shakeup coming here soon. Talk to me a little bit about where you live and what do you do for a living?
Mm-hmm. So right now we're in Denver. And that's been the last couple of years. I do commercial real estate for a living. So kind of different, but, I work in valuation, so it's fairly flexible. I did this when I was living in Texas, continued doing it here in Denver, and we'll continue to do it in Texas. I've really liked it. It's been good to me, and it affords me the means to do all the stuff I love to do and the time to do it. So yeah. That's been important. But yeah, originally from Texas, grew up hunting whitetails, and that's kind of what gave me the itch. And then, you know, like a lot of people, you get into college, you start looking into new hobbies and stuff, and ended up coming out here a couple times. And I told my wife, I said, before we, you know, really settle down and start having kids and planting roots, I want to come up here and actually live up here for a little while. So We've been up here the last couple of years, and it's been great. Really gotten to spend a lot more time out here. And like you said, try to go from at least somewhat of a rookie plus to maybe that next level up. And I still don't feel like I'm there.
Right. What was it about Colorado that pulled you out of Texas?
So I grew up coming up here a lot with my family. Okay. And that's pretty common for a lot of Texans. Colorado is kind of the Texas playground to a degree. But man, just the opportunity. And I think more than anything, mule deer, I'm a mule deer guy. Okay. And man, like I think like a lot of other mule deer guys, I got, you know, got my itch from listening to all the stories of like the early 2000s, reading all the books about Colorado, and Colorado is still the deer mecca. It's different than it was, but, man, dude, just having the opportunity to move up here and get to be immersed in that got me here.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, I know a guy I know really well. He lives in Western Colorado, in Montrose, so south of Grand Junction. So he did the same thing. He's like, dude, I just got to get out of Michigan and I'm going to go to Colorado and I'm going to see what happens. He hasn't left yet, but so he's been there a long time. But what was it specifically that brought you, like, was it the mountains? Was it the, cause they got elk and mule deer in Wyoming and Montana and Utah and all those other places. Why specifically Colorado?
Well, I guess two things. I have a wife in tow on all this and we have a lot of friends here in Denver. And so that was going to make both of our lives easier. But B, I think, I mean, you know, growing up, coming up here, there was always the allure to it. But I think like any other state, as you go there more, you still love the things that you love, but you kind of start to peel the layers back on some of these other experiences that don't get talked about, that maybe aren't published or you're not seeing videos of them. And you go, man, I've always wanted to fish that river, or I've always wanted to like hunt that unit that, you know, might be a sleeper. And I think, you know, it took us coming up here and doing a couple hunts in college and stuff like that for me to go, man, there's a lot of untapped stuff in Colorado, which sounds weird to say with as populated as it is and as popular as coming up here has become for everybody. But man, there were so many little weird, you know, nooks and crannies I wanted to explore. And I knew really the only way to get to do that ever in my lifetime wasn't, you know, spending a week up here every summer and every fall, it was, you know, hey, I need to live up there and be doing the things on the weekends that I used to dream about all year.
And you're saying that especially when Colorado is changing their rules and regulations, you know, to essentially slow down the non-resident movement in that state to preference point units and, you know, getting rid of over the counter stuff. So, you know, that, how many years have you lived in Colorado?
We're coming up on three. So we won't even make three. We're now going to be moving back to Texas here pretty soon. But I think, you know, it was three, but when we moved, I ended up getting a hunting season kind of on the front end of that. And I was between jobs. So I sucked a lot of juice out of that, out of that 2.5 years or whatever it was.
Yeah. And that's cool, man.
Yeah.
And so did that moving there and becoming a resident for 2 years, did that allow you more opportunity from a tag allocation standpoint than a non-resident might get?
I would say so, but I'll be honest, I didn't even really capitalize on it. I don't think, you know, I think there's some allure to a lot of people of like, oh, well, you know, one day when I'm retired, I'll move to Arizona or Wyoming with 20 points and I'll get to cash them all in as a resident. I'm still sitting on all my deer and elk points. I've really just been hunting reissue stuff, second choice stuff, over the counter elk tags. What it gave me the opportunity to do here, which is what I love most, is taking friends on other seasons. And I think that's one of the beauties of Colorado is there's so many different SKUs. If you want to fill up your whole calendar basically centered around Colorado, you could have a friend get a first rifle tag, another friend get a second rifle tag, somebody else get a third tag, and have your friends come from out of state. So living here, kind of being that base camp for a lot of my friends, I got to get on a lot of hunts. It's been really, really fun. And I think that was the coolest thing for me because, you know, it's like, you can attest to this, and I think it's effectively like the whole platform here is, you know, you got to get more at bats, right? Oh, yeah. You got to get more experience. And even if it's not my own tag, man, I feel so much more well-equipped after these last 2 years living up here because of all the other hunts I got to go on. Yeah. So doing that it's been one of the best things about moving up here.
Yeah, man. And that's a theme we start to hear from this podcast specifically is like, you don't have to go chase giant bulls every year to become a better elk hunter, right? Go fill, like there's so many opportunity for cow tags, or I got a buddy from Michigan, a different guy who comes out west every year, even though he doesn't have a tag, he's out calling for guys. He's out glassing for guys and he's immersing himself in it every year, even though he doesn't have a tag, which, you know, just as well as I do, when you have boots on the ground, that's the win right there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And the crazy thing is you listen to a lot of guys that are at that next level, right? That like they do have expectations and they are coming out to hunt a certain caliber of animal. And they always say, you know, well, time is the X factor. And I used to always say this in fishing. Quite frankly, I think I'm probably a little more qualified to talk about fly fishing than I am hunting. But I used to say all that all the time in fishing is like it just takes a certain amount of time. You got to fish the right water and do the right stuff, but it takes time. But what a lot of guys won't tell you when they talk about that time factor is the time factor is really just multiplying your odds at running into luck. Cause right. They always say, you know, it's where, you know, whatever preparation meets opportunity. But, you know, I'll give an example like this past year, one of my buddies that I took here for just a really simple, you know, meat hunt, he got a second choice tag, second season. We had no expectations. We were only going to hunt a day and a half and we just wanted to put some meat in his freezer. He killed one of the biggest bucks out of this particular unit that I've ever been a part of. And I hunt that unit a lot and I hunt it hard. Yeah. But that was just a product of, well, hey, you know, I'm going to keep hunting this whole season here. At some point I'm going to run into something cool. Yeah. My biggest bull, that I killed 2 years ago, I found where those bulls live and now somewhere I can continue to go back to. During a mule deer hunt in second season, like 2 years before that, wasn't even planning on, you know, finding that, but it was just getting out in the field, right? Yeah. Getting out with modest expectations, hunting hard, and then you kind of stumble into opportunity. And that's why you keep going. And that's why you go on these cow tags, right? All this random stuff. You just got to show up.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that moment. Like, so you were living in Texas, you moved to Colorado. How many years have you hunted? Did you hunt Colorado before you moved to Colorado?
I think I did my first hunt the back end of college. It must have been 2019 or 2020.
Yeah.
Which, if there was ever an awesome time to be in college and really starting to learn hunting, it was COVID. So I'm very grateful for that, because that was fun to get to peel off for like a week and a half and just go learn.
Yeah.
So I guess by that point I had done probably 3 years of hunting. And in those 3 years, being from Texas, I probably only did two hunts a year.
Okay.
If that, maybe some years just one big one. And it was enough. It gave me enough of an itch to be like, man, I cannot go the rest of my young adulthood only doing one of these a year. I need to move so I can do this all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm going to ask you a question here, but I got to do my commercial break before I forget about it. And so the first things first, if you are looking for, if you're heading out west, or you're a whitetail hunter and you want a head that, where most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States, very durable head, go check out wasparchery.com. I'm a huge fan. Dude, I've killed a ton of deer with the 3-blade jackhammer. They have fixed blade options as well. So go check out wasparchery.com. I have a 20% discount code, NFC20, for 20% off. Next on the list, Montana Decoy. A lot of Western species you can get inside the bubble with a proper decoy. Go check out montanadecoy.com. Check out their antelope, their mule deer, their whitetail, their elk, and then they have cattle. They have turkeys. Turkey season's coming up. They have turkey decoys as well. montanadecoy.com. All right. Did you have a preference? Like, because for me, I can't go, like, I can, but I'd be burning some type of bridge at home if I was going to hunt mule deer and elk every single season. So I've been choosing to do mule deer just because of the drive, right? It's closer. I can run into mule deer closer. What was your poison when you got out here?
The poison has, it's been an interesting cocktail. It's always kind of been rooted in mule deer, and somehow, some way, I think that's traced back to whitetail, right? Yeah. Like I fell in love with whitetail first. I'll always, you know, be happy to admit that. And I think maybe just something about mule deer, you know, stems from that. That said, dude, elk are cool. Like, they're the icon of the West, and I'm never gonna like fight anyone on that. I get it. Everybody from Pennsylvania, Texas, Florida, like, dude, elk are the thing. I get it.
Yep.
That said, one of the coolest things about Colorado is how often you can run into both and feasibly plan a hunt to do both. Yep. And we've now done, I say we, like me and my buddies, we've probably done two or three hunts where we've tagged out on both in a week, or at least had a really good chance of tagging out on both in a week, maybe had a missed opportunity here or there. I'm not going to tell everyone you should do it, especially if you're on a budget and you can't afford an $800 non-resident elk tag. But if you can, dude, you really could. If you had a good work ethic and pretty modest expectations, you really could load up, come out to Colorado, and in a week kill both. And so that's why I say the poison got messy, because it always stems from mule deer. But dude, there's some really cool opportunities when you get out here and do some of these OTC hunts to go fill your elk tag as well.
Yeah. How easy is it for you to get, for a resident to get an elk tag and a mule deer tag? Do you got to bounce to different units for that, or what's that like?
Yes and no. you know, when I first moved up here and when I first started hunting up here, it was a lot easier, like you alluded to, that they're just now kind of starting to roll out some more restrictions, and it's changing. I hate to say it, but yeah, I would advocate for anyone to actually come out here and do it if you're thinking about doing it, because it's only going to get worse in terms of the non-resident restrictions. But I think right now, as long as you pay good attention and get something like Go Hunt, right, where you can actually filter through things and figure out what's available for OTC, you know, what's a low point deer unit, XYZ, it's not that hard. You just kind of have to do a little bit of homework. Yeah. That said, it's changing. I saw, I guess, what, 2-3 weeks ago, they're now going to, all the Gunnison units, 54, 55, I think 551, everything around Gunnison is now going to full draw for rifle elk. So you used to be able to get some of those Gunnison deer tags and say, oh man, you know, I finally drew this Gunnison deer tag that I'm so excited about. I'm going to spend so much time out there, I might as well pick up an OTC elk tag. That's not going to be the case anymore starting this year. Some of those units have been draw, but I think there were a handful that were holding out, and I want to say it's 54 and 55. Yeah. That's not the case. And so that's one little, you know, illustration of the landscape that's changing.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, get ready to see that statewide over the next 5 to 10 years. But all that to say, the timing's still good for anyone that wants to draw a deer tag. There are tags you can easily get with 0 points, 1 point, 2 points that coincide with that OTC rifle elk season. You just got to do a little bit of homework.
Yeah. Okay. Out in Colorado, my experience in Colorado is climb as high as you can, stomp over deadfall all day long, hate your life, and then go back to wherever you came from and bitch about how hard it was. Right. In all my time in Colorado, I had two elk within shooting distance, and I've only gone archery. Okay. I've never done any rifle. So my goal is to someday shoot elk with a bow. And I had one big bull sneak up behind me. He didn't make a noise. Here I am sounding like a truck driving through the woods when I'm trying to climb over deadfall. Somehow he took the same path behind me, didn't make a noise. And he was like staring at 40 yards just right at me. And I'm like, oh shit, where'd you come from? I turned around, he left. And then the next one that happened was my buddy. We called this bull out of his bed and he came down. And unfortunately my buddy didn't get him, but he was kind of within shooting range of me too. And so that was it at that point. Is the entire state of Colorado like that? What has your experience been with getting, let's go elk then mule deer, getting elk into shooting range?
So again, I'll say the same thing on the weapon choice that I would on the deer versus elk argument. I am not going to die on the hill that archery elk, September elk is not the best experience out there. It is. I understand wanting to kill one with a bow. I understand wanting to hear the bugles and do everything that we all watched on Primos growing up. That said, my experience is going to be skewed because I prefer rifle seasons. I prefer late season elk. I like hunting them in the snow. I think maybe it stems from starting out focusing on mule deer, but I've grown to love that. Honestly, I know it sounds crazy, even more than chasing them in September. And I've done it with friends, on archery hunts. So all that to say, I've had a lot more experience getting elk in range, killing elk, you know, all that, because I'm doing it late season with a rifle. Now, I can't speak to the archery stuff in September and even some of the muzzleloader stuff because I've been on those hunts. I've done them with friends. I research them. I talk to tons of guys here. Your experience is not, that's not abnormal at all.
Yeah.
That might be for a lot of guys kind of par for the course. You know, hey, we made a big trip out there. We hated our lives for a week. We stomped through deadfall. We did tons and tons of miles, and we come out with this one really cool encounter, right? Or two really cool encounters.
Yeah.
The only thing you can hope for, in my opinion, there is to continue to build on that to where by the time you go back for the third or fourth time, hopefully, and this is a hill I will die on, to that same unit.
Yeah.
Right. I will say that's the secret sauce there. By the third or fourth time you go back, you've got, you know, a couple really good encounters and hopefully a couple elk down.
Yeah.
That said, if you want to up your odds, in my opinion, I would look at some of those late season hunts.
Okay. Why?
I think the obvious one is the weapon, right? Yep. It's a rifle. Like you're saying, hey, I've only had two that I've gotten in range. Well, range with a bow is vastly different than range with today's modern rifles. So there's that. I will also say, I think there's a lot of stories I hear from guys during that September hunt that say the same thing, man. We pounded deadfall. We pounded the timber. We ran. And they don't get even that spine tingle of, man, we saw them and we felt like we were in them. Well, why? Because you were in the timber, right? But that's where you have to be. It's September. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
But dude, during third and fourth, you can do that same amount of effort to get up to a really high knob, glass, and you'll see them.
Yeah.
So then you at least, even if you don't kill one, you at least feel like, man, I did it. I was in the game. I saw him. I found him.
Yeah.
Snow, the migration, the feeding features that they seek out that time of year, it all helps your case for wanting to at least see and have opportunities at elk. Whereas archery, yes, the upside is greater because you could have that heart pounding 40 yards bugling in your face. Yeah. But man, if you just want to feel the success of getting in on elk, big, big late season elk guy. That's my preference.
Yeah. And how is their behavior different late season than it is? Obviously they're not bugling. They're not herding up cows to try and breed. The breeding season's over, but where, like on the, from the bottom to the top and how they move through terrain, what's different about that?
It, in my opinion, from what I've observed, is almost entirely dependent on snow. Deer seem to have a bit more of an affinity for migrating around a time of year. Yes, snow, especially early snow, can change that. Elk seem to live to their tolerance, right? Like I've seen bulls up at 11. I think this last year I saw bulls at 11.2. On like November 20 something, like right before Thanksgiving, because there was just no snow. They live to their tolerance. So I think that's the biggest factor is snow, or the lack thereof. But all that to say, it's a spectrum, right? So when you look at these late season rifle hunts, second season starts and it's moving back earlier, starts at the back end of October. I've seen true, like, maybe not like September level, but true rutting action, like bugling and bulls gathering up their cows at the start of second. But then you go all the way to fourth, and if the snow is even slightly normal, they should be on or very proximate to their winter range, and their behavior changes completely. Those late season bulls, they don't want to move. If you had a cow walk right past them, they might just look at them. They don't want to move. They want to hole up. I always like to say that they're hungover, right? When you're hungover, you don't want to get up and go around and go meet people for lunch or dinner. It's like, I just want to hole up and nurse myself and order Uber Eats.
Yep.
So that changes, but it's such a spectrum because second is October, right? And in some years it's hot and there's no snow.
Yeah.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. you'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
What does snow do then?
Snow does two things for me. And it's fun when I take guys from Texas and they're like, you know, getting all their stuff ready and they're like, man, it's going to be cold and blah, blah. And I'm sitting there going, you guys better pray that it dumps snow. And like, what do you mean? Like we won't be able to get around. I'm going to freeze my ass off. I'm like, you got to pray for snow for two reasons. A, it forces elk to get up and get moving. Even if they're already in their winter range spot where they want to hole up, they're going to have to get up on their feet. They're going to move around. I've watched bulls just pound snow with their hooves, digging out a hole so they can feed. But the second thing it does, and I would argue this is probably the bigger thing, is it helps your glassing. Dude, elk are, they look like, you know, Twinkies on a vanilla cake, right? When that snow hits and your glassing goes from, man, I'm trying to pick out this, you know, tiny little yellow speck on a hillside full of aspens to, okay, this, they're going to pop, right? I can see them from miles off. The other cool thing, dude, is if you're doing what you were mentioning during archery, you're struggling to find elk, you're not glassing them. If you just walk ridgelines for miles, you're going to cut tracks, right? That snow, not only does it help you glass, but it helps you cut fresh tracks. That's actually how I killed my biggest bull 2 years ago. I knew where they were, but I couldn't figure out where they went. So I walked a ridgeline, followed his tracks into his bedroom and killed him. So I think snow is in my mind, it's the equalizer. It's what really helps you out in those late season hunts.
Yeah. Cool. So the snow, they stand out. You know, you've mentioned the word expectation a lot. If I'm going to Colorado, maybe it's my third, fourth time. I know they're in this unit somewhere. Maybe I even know there's two or three drainages within a couple miles of each other, and I know what they're in there. How do you go about in this late season with snow time frame, knowing where to start your day looking for these elk?
I start my day glassing. Always. And maybe, you know, it's like you said, maybe this is your third or fourth time. Maybe you have a specific drainage or a specific ridge that you want to work because you've seen them there in the past. You've got some intel. That would be great. But for me, I always start glassing and I always start pretty damn far away, especially if there's snow on the ground. Yeah. Get high, glass real far. Even if I can't kill those elk that day. And this is pretty common for me. Even if I can't kill those elk that day, now I know, right? So sometimes the worst thing you could do is build this plan on Google Earth from your home back east of all these basins that are all going to have elk. And I'm just going to keep going boom, 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 boom through all these. And you go work through them on this micro level and you missed it because you never went back to the macro level. Right? You're thinking constantly, I want to kill today. I want to get in a position this morning at sunup to kill right here, right now. Dude, sometimes you got to go back to macro. And that even happened to me this year in a unit where I know the elk. I know them well, and I know where they should be. The weather was so bad, though, that I had to tell my guys, look, hey, I've got my spots that we could go kill today, but we need to go back to like a 30,000 foot view here. glass for miles off and try to figure out what the hell is going on.
Gotcha.
So that's my take in those late season hunts is if you are coming from out east and you don't really have a really good starting point, go macro first. That's yeah. always my ticket.
And so when you mean that, like if I am out there and I have 10 days to try and kill an elk, are you saying that I shouldn't be going in gung-ho and trying to like, and I start to struggle. It's okay to put a plan together to be like, maybe not kill day one, but put the plan together to kill day 3, 4, 5.
Bingo. And not okay. even kill, like to be in the game, right? Yeah. To me, the game doesn't start till you find them, yeah. right? I can't kill them if I can't find them, if I don't know where right. they are. Step one has to be finding them. And, yeah. You know, that, I guess that is the disadvantage during that late season. You can have situations, like you mentioned in September where, you know, a blind squirrel finds a nut because the elk are so spread out. They're moving constantly. They're doing different things. That late season, they herd up.
Yeah.
And so you might be sitting in a macro spot looking at 10 different drainages and only one or two of them have elk. Whereas during that archery season, you could probably run the gauntlet on those drainages and find a lone bull here, a small group here with a satellite. That late season, dude, the macro is so much more important because these elk might now be in a herd of 50 to 100 and only one of those drainages has them. So I've yeah. got to go back to that macro for my first 1 or 2 days so that my next 7 to 9 days or whatever it is I have are spent in the right spot.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm just wasting my time.
Right. When it comes to making mistakes in the late season, all right, is it amplified because, let's say they catch your wind or you shoot and miss, is it amplified now because they're in a bigger group?
I think it's amplified for two reasons. A, because they're in a bigger group, like you mentioned, and it doesn't take much to get that herd up and moving and out of there. It's crazy when you do get to see a herd move like that. If you spook them or you kill one, it looks like a mountain of cockroaches just moving across the hillside. But I think that herd, it's harder, right? Every time you get more eyes and noses, it's harder to fool them. The second reason I think it's amplified, dude, by the time you get out there for third season, they have been chased. They have been hunted for months now. So they're way less tolerant of any kind of, traffic. And if they hear your safety click off at 100 yards, they might be like, well, I've heard that. We're getting the hell out of here. So I think those are kind of the two components to that time of year. I think maybe the third thing I would say there is if you get some snow on the ground, like I said, like you should be hoping for.
Yeah,
dude, that 2 mile hike out is very different than when it was September, right? Yeah. So you having to go pivot now that you screwed it up the first time, man, that takes a lot, especially if you're trying to backpack that late season. Now you got to go pack up like your warm weather tent and all that stuff. And it sucks, dude. So, I would say that some of the mistakes there are very amplified.
Yeah. What about the two seasons? Let's say we're talking late season, we're talking firearms still.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, if I made you pick one, would you rather hunt the first firearm season or the last firearm season of the year? And is there any benefits or negatives to each one?
Mm-hmm. So if I actually had this conversation the other day, with Jaden, who we were about to talking about, but, I would rather hunt the 5 days surrounding the first weekend of the first rifle hunt or the last 5 days of the last one. And I'll give you the two reasons why. If I could, let's do the hypothetical of I'm coming from out east, I'm coming from Texas, and I have a limited time, right? If you give me 7 days, right? 7 days time off, whatever. I would try to come out here on the early end. We'll start there. I would try to come out here a couple of days before, the start of second season or first rifle or anything. And I would try to scout and I would try to get some elk found that I could kill on opening day or the second day. That's the juice on the front end.
Yeah.
Two reasons. A, I think they're a little more likely to be in a summer-esque pattern. I'm not going to say they're going to be up at the top, but they might be kind of settled into maybe that next band down from the top, mm-hmm. especially the bulls. For the reason that they've now had, especially for second, they've had probably like a 3 week lapse in getting, well, no, probably a week and a half, 2 week lapse in getting hunted from first rifle. So they've kind of settled back into wherever they want to be. So you have a chance of killing them that opening morning in a more relaxed state.
Gotcha.
I'll go to the late season now. I would rather have the last, you know, 5 to 7 days of fourth rifle, which is one of my favorites, for the reason that we talked about earlier, which is snow, yeah. Right? By going for those last couple of days, I've multiplied my odds that there's going to be snow on the ground. The bulls are going to be in their late season pattern, and I'm going to be able to find them and kill them. They both have their pros and cons. I'm not saying the stuff in the middle is bad. I've killed a lot of elk in that stuff in the middle. It's just a little less predictable, right? There's more guys out there that are doing what we just talked about. Bumping them, they're moving up and over a couple ridges. You need to be out there and try to capitalize on that, but it's a little bit less in your hands, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Fourth season, the last handful of days, right? There's a lot of chance that they've been hunted. They've, you know, the snow is on the ground. Does that make it, in fact, easier to see but harder to get to? Are they like, for example, a whitetail? Are they back to the back of the public land? Are they on private where it's no go? Like, what are they like? Where are they at after a full season of being hunted?
So I'll speak to the bulls, and then I'll speak to like the elk in general.
Okay.
Cause that's the cool thing about like third and fourth is if there's snow, you'll notice there's a difference. And I honestly, I kind of liken it to early season mule deer in a way. You can find deer, and then you can find groups of mature, like bachelor groups of mature bucks, and they're not always going to be in the same place.
Right.
That time of year, the bulls are going to be in, like I said, they're going to be in their hidey hole where they can be hungover. They can order Chipotle and not have to get up from their bed, right? They want to have food, cover, all that jazz right there tight. They don't want to move. That is usually going to be in a really nasty, crappy spot because they don't want to risk getting bumped by people and having to move. So they go find the crappiest spot that has all the things they need. They hole up and they don't move. That's tough because, yeah, like you said, getting up there sucks. However, I think it's nice because like the early season mule deer, they like being there and they want to stay there and they'll do it year after year. Like those early season mule deer, if you find them in a basin, you might come back in 3 years and maybe it's not the same bucks, but there will be bucks using that basin. Yeah. Same way with late season elk. They may use it a little differently. It might not all be the same bulls, but they're going to be in that spot for a reason. The elk in general, though, not just the bulls, the elk in general that are cows, cows with raghorns, cows with young bulls, they tend to follow more of what I would call like the traditional winter range patterns, right? Like you can go pull up the winter range data, and that's kind of where you're going to find more of the broader elk herds. The bulls are going to be slightly removed from that. They'll be near where the winter range is. They'll be near where the cows and the young bulls are. I've sat in spots glassing where I can literally look down, see the cows and young bulls, and then just go boop, 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 up, and there's the big bulls.
Yeah.
But getting to the big bulls is the crappy part.
Why do you think the bulls are staying at a higher elevation than the rest of the herd?
I think there's two things. I think A, they're just less likely to get bothered. Like I mentioned, right. They can stay up there and they know that most Joe Blows, most recreational hikers with their, you know, golden doodles in Colorado aren't going to go up there. So they're less likely to have to get up and move and burn calories.
Yeah.
But I think the second thing is bulls are just bigger, right? They have more tolerance for being up that high. And like I said, pawing out something to feed on in the ground. They can stand higher. And if the snow's up to their belly, maybe it doesn't bother them quite as much. The cows have calves, right? Yeah. That can't live up there. They have to get down a little lower and find food that's a little bit easier to get to.
Yeah.
So I think those are probably the two components there.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. I'm getting to an age where the bow hunting is awesome, but I also have a knee replacement surgery scheduled for March. So that's going to change some things, at least in the short term for me. And so those rifle tags are starting to seem a little bit, sound a little bit better every single year. Right. And so, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll see. Now, mule deer, right? You mentioned that a lot of these mule deer are in the same environment throughout the years that, that the whitetails are in. Walk us through what the deer behavior or what the mule deer are doing throughout the course of that. Let's just start it off post archery season.
Okay. Yeah. So post archery, the deer and elk do have a lot of overlap. And I've found that it can be really frustrating looking for exclusively one or the other in Colorado, because you are inevitably going to run into the other species. And that's just the nature of the beast. I guess if you're going to say post archery, so everything after September, the first thing that's worth noting in Colorado is there are now new, as of last year, new early rifle, or I'm sorry, first rifle deer tags. That's a very tough time of year to hunt deer. They're kind of in between their summer pattern and where they want to be for the rut. Their metabolism has changed in a way that they're kind of just, you know, they're like holing up to get ready for the rut. They don't really want to be out in the sunlight, because the feed at that point is just not really worth it to them, but they also don't want to run all the way down to the winter range and hang out and wait for the does. So they're kind of hanging out in this middle ground, and it's really tough to hunt them. That said, there are some really cool opportunities now that Colorado has offered for that first rifle hunt. And a guy really could get into some awesome hunts and some awesome units for very low points.
What are those?
Plays out with the draw, because not only is Colorado a preference point system, so when you introduce new tags, it kind of takes a while to see where that supply and demand shakes out. But now in 2028, everything's going to change.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The next hunt after that would be that second rifle hunt, followed by the third, followed by the fourth, each with a week break in between. That, to me, kickstarts second being first, kickstarts the what you'd kind of call the pre-rut and a little bit of like the air quotes pre-migration. I say air quotes because not every unit has like this big migration. But they are moving from, you know, their summer range down to the lower stuff. Each season, in fact, each day, each weekend after that second kicks off, you're going to see a little bit more of all those things I just mentioned, a little bit more rut, a little bit more deer moving down to the winter range, and hopefully a little bit more activity. Now, like we talked about with elk, snow is the great equalizer, right? I've had some second hunts that I, no joke, would have preferred over the fourth hunt, right? The fourth should have more snow, more movement, more rut. I've had second hunts where I would have said, yeah, dude, trade me the fourth tag in this unit for the second tag right now.
And what are the dates there? That good. What are the dates for these?
Dates are now going to be, it's going to be the second to last weekend of October through, well, I guess it would be the last full weekend of October through what this year is going to be that Halloween weekend. So traditionally, it's always been the second to last weekend in October through the last weekend and maybe like the first couple days of November. It's a Saturday to a Sunday is really what it is for a second season. You get a week break, third kicks off, another Saturday to Sunday, which for the last 5 years prior to this was a Saturday to a Friday. They gave you two extra days. Now we're going back to the old model. Then, and this is why I'm not always that bullish on fourth. Fourth gets a 3-day break following third, and then you only have 5 days for fourth. The reason for that is all these seasons in Colorado run concurrently, elk and deer. Fourth, sometimes I've hunted it for elk and been like, man, this just isn't enough. This doesn't feel fair, you know, whatever. Fourth is 5 days for deer because that really is, they're about to hit the peak of their rut. And Colorado already, in my opinion, dishes out way too many rut tags. Like there's no other state that hunts deer in the rut the way we do, except for Montana. But man, I think if they were to extend that fourth tag 7 days, we might not have a 4-point left in the state. So yeah. it's 5 days for a reason. You're getting primo rut dates. But that is kind of how you view, I guess, the trickle down of second, third, fourth. And then there's now this new early first rifle.
Yeah. Are deer moving up and down the mountains the differently or the same as elk when the snow comes?
I would say differently. It's the same theme of if you get a dump of snow and the snow is up to their bellies, none of those animals want to be enduring that. So for the most part, not all of them, but for the most part, they're going to move down. The reason I say differently is like I mentioned, deer have a little bit more, I guess, calendar, focus. There's more like tied to the dates. So even if there's been a really warm year like we had this year, at some point the deer are going to go, okay, it's time for me to head down.
Yeah.
Whereas elk, dude, it's like I said, I saw some at 11-2 this year on, a couple of days before Thanksgiving. They're not going to go always unless they have to. There are elk that I've seen that will move down to the winter range even when it's warm. But, dude, if the feed's good up high, they'll stay up there. I think there's a couple of different reasons for that, but one of the biggest things is what they eat, right? If there's still grass up high, even if it's, dead and it's under 6 inches of snow, the elk will dig it out and they'll eat up there. They just don't want to get bothered. Deer, their diet changes, their stomach changes. So as that, November window approaches, they kind of know they need to start heading down. And that feed that they've been feeding on all summer up high, it's not really available to them anymore.
Yeah. Okay. What's the pressure like in some of the units that you hunt during these seasons? I mean, are we talking pack trailheads everywhere you go, Orange Army everywhere, or how do you stand out? And what I mean by that is, how do you stand out distancing yourself from that to locate the animals that you want?
The way you stand out for pressure in Colorado is you don't let it bother you as much as it bothers everyone else. And that's my opinion, right? There's a lot of people who will say, oh, yeah, there's a lot of pressure, but if you really just hike your guts out and get away from Pete and do all the hard stuff, you'll get away from him.
Yeah.
That's not been my experience. There's a lot of guys that work really hard now. We have the means to, right? We have all the gear and the technology and the motivation from YouTube and Joe Rogan to go further, right? Yeah. So I don't go into hunts with this idea that I'm just going to work my ass off and get away from everybody. I go into these hunts knowing they're going to be there and I'm not going to let it bother me the way it bothers them.
That's a unique perspective to have, because most people will tell you, I see a guy, I'm going to head the other direction. I'm not even going to bother with that guy. And it sounds like you're okay with that guy being there.
I'm okay with that guy being there, especially in Colorado, because, and I'm not harping on anybody, for the most part, there's a lot of really, Elmer Fudd type hunters in Colorado.
So you're just like, hey, I'm being a little confident here. I'm just a little bit better than they are at what we're trying to accomplish.
I'm just going
to
do it differently, right? I'm going to do it right. I think it's, not to make another fly fishing analogy, but it is similar to fly fishing in a way. The rivers in Colorado are pretty crowded, and I have to fish these rivers from the perspective of I'm doing my best with my gear, my flies, my skill set to catch these fish, whether they just got fished too or not. And I can't look at every hole that someone fished right before me and assume that guy had all the right flies, was throwing the right stuff at the right depth and the right presentation. Most of the time, that's not the case. The guy in front of you and the guy behind you are throwing the wrong crap and they're doing it wrong. And I think that's not always the case, right? I meet a lot of really good, smart, hard hunters in Colorado, but I sit on these knobs and sun comes up and I see people and I see the Orange Army and I just try to take comfort in reminding myself most of these guys probably aren't doing it right.
Yeah.
And that may not always be the case. Like I said, there's a lot of good hard hunters out there, but that's what keeps me going is looking at those guys and going, but did they really glass this area hard? Did they really, look for tracks? Did they really scan every nook and cranny and do they have the savvy that I'm going to try to bring to this? that's kind of how I have to look at it. Otherwise, I would go back to the tent feeling deflated. And frankly, I would spend the whole week trying to find a hole to hunt that's unbothered, and I might not find it.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to hunt with the Orange Army, and there's a lot of places, and this is a whole different can of worms. There's a lot of places you can use them to your advantage if you're savvy and you know the area.
That's a fact. That's a fact. All right. Let's say there's a group of guys out there, or there's a guy out there who's like, you know what, maybe I want to give Colorado late season a try. I got the points for it, or I want to start the preference, collecting the preference point, or go to a unit where the preference points don't matter as much. Is there anything else that you can share on planning and preparation to get yourself in a position to be successful doing a late season, either a mule deer or elk hunt?
Yeah, I think all the typical factors that you could consider are there, right? Physical fitness, that's huge, right? And I always tell guys, I'm not trying to get you in shape so that you can crush this mountain and you don't feel like garbage. You're going to feel like garbage. I'm trying to get you in shape so that on day 5 and 6, when everyone else has blisters and they feel like crap and they're in the tent, we're out there. There's the gear component. And one of the things I'll say there is I'm not even talking about the 1,000-yard rifle, the nicest binos or anything. I'm talking about the stuff that's going to keep you out there when the weather hits. Because like I said, a lot of these late season hunts don't get great until the weather hits. And sometimes when the weather hits, it puts a lot of guys out of commission. If you have the right gear to be out there and endure that, you might be the only guy that's able to capitalize on it. So get your late season gear dialed, get the right boots, have the right insulation, and know how to work a layering system so that when that forecast hits, you're excited, not concerned. Yeah. I think probably the biggest thing that would help someone on a late season hunt is expectations. It is entirely possible that you come out here and it is hot as the Dickens and there's guys everywhere and you get your butt kicked and that happens. It happened to me this last year, right? I took some buddies out and we had a horrible heat spell, and we found elk, but we never got one killed.
Yeah.
Expectations will make or break people on these hunts. You have to remind yourself that it's a low point tag. It's a very crowded state for the most part, but it is that way because there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of deer. There's a lot of elk. You could come around any corner and find the buck or bull of your dreams. And you just kind of have to remember that.
Those are good words, my friend. And that's a great place to end it. And so, Mr. Garrison, I appreciate you taking time and dropping some knowledge on us today. Thank you very much for all of that. And for all of you who are listening, if you could do me a huge favor and go to iTunes or Spotify, wherever you download the Western Rookie Podcast, please give me a 5-star review. Let everybody know that this is not only entertaining, but educational as well. Also, go check out the Western Rookie YouTube channel. We're trying to gain a little momentum there and get some subscribers there as well. Go take a look at that. Other than that, good vibes, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.